Next item is item 21. Is that 21?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Rose.
Okay, so item 21 is the board consideration to adopt order R3-2012-0135, which is a revision of waste discharge requirements and reissuance of NPDES permit, phase one permit for the city of Salinas Municipal Stormwater Discharges. Jennifer Epp, Water Resource Control Engineer, the staff person in the stormwater program, will begin presentation for staff today. And the city of Salinas has a presentation, and before we begin that, our counsel, Ms. McChesney, will provide a little background information.
Thank you. So I just wanted to make a statement about the role of the regional board in taking actions that are brought to the board, just to clarify the public what their role is. So as most of you know, the regional board members are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the state senate, and they are appointed for four-year staggered terms. The board members must live or have a principal place of business within the region and are also associated with six different categories, but they also take an oath of office to uphold the Constitution and the laws of the state of California. But even though they're appointed to a category and they might live in a certain location, their oath of office is to represent the people of the state of California to implement water quality laws. Their oath is not to represent a certain constituency or place of where they live or place of business. The oath of office is to represent all the people of the state of California to implement water quality laws. So I just want to make that clarification for the public. So,
thank you.
And at the podium, we have Jennifer Epp in the stormwater program.
Great. Shall I go ahead and begin?
Please.
Go ahead.
Great. Well, thanks. Good morning.
Good morning.
I don't know if I was going to say good afternoon or good morning. Good morning, Chairman Young and members of the board. As Chris said, I'm Jennifer Epp with the Stormwater Unit. And this is item 21, the City of Salinas Phase 1 Municipal Stormwater Permit Renewal. As Chris mentioned earlier in your agenda package, there are two supplemental sheets. Want to make sure everyone had those. And we'll give you some more details about those supplemental sheets as we go along. How's my volume?
It's fine.
Is it good? Okay, great. Okay, today in our presentation, I'm going to be giving you some background on the permit. And then John Rohrbaugh here will explain why the permit is needed and why it's important to adopt the permit today. He'll also discuss the goal and the strategy that we used when we developed this permit. Then Tamara Presser is going to compare the existing permit with the new permit. I'll discuss the comments that we received and the changes that we made to the draft permit as a result of those comments. And then I'll conclude with a recommendation for you to adopt the revised permit for the City of Salinas today. And that recommendation includes the minor revisions that are contained in your supplemental sheets. I'll start with describing the slide that you see here in the figure. This is a map of the Lower Salinas Valley and the Monterey Peninsula. And this is the lower portion of Monterey Bay here. What you see in the areas of green is irrigated agriculture, and the areas that are in red and orange are impervious surfaces. So the City of Salinas sits here and is this area. And the permit that we're talking about today addresses the impacts and the actions in this area here. Now, if we zoom in a little on the map, this is an aerial photo, and it shows the permit coverage area outlined here in black, which is the City of Salinas. The city's future growth area is predominantly here in the north and eastern portions of the city, and you'll be hearing more about this area throughout the presentation. And I'll remind the board that we've been talking about the future growth area at waterborne hearings for many, many years, and you have provided direction to staff to make protection of water quality in the future growth area a priority. The city is approximately 10 miles from Monterey Bay, And the stormwater in the city drains to a couple different places. It drains to the Salinas River. There's a pump station here and a pipe that discharges to the Salinas River. It also drains to the Reclamation Canal, which is sometimes called the Reclamation Ditch, as well as the Santa Rita Creek, Natividad Creek, and Gavilan Creeks that you see there. And all of these water bodies drain to the Monterey Bay. The Salinas River, depending on the time of year, either drains directly into the Monterey Bay or through the old Salinas River and into Moss Landing Harbor. The remaining water bodies that I talked about drain into Temple Darrell Slough, which then drains into Moss Landing Harbor. We'll be talking about watersheds today, and I can try to provide a little bit of context with this map here. So Salinas sits in the larger Salinas Valley watershed, but at a smaller scale, each of the water bodies here have a watershed, or the area that drains to those water bodies. And for the permit, we've taken this area here, the permit coverage area, and we have divided it up into some smaller sub watersheds. And this is to help the city focus its resources in the most efficient manner. Next, I'll provide some background. The permit is based on the Federal Clean Water Act and regulations. And this requires municipal stormwater permits to reduce pollutants to the maximum extent practical, as well as to protect water quality. Stormwater permits are different than many of the permits that we adopt here. You know, they don't have numerical effluent limits as their standard. Instead, they require pollutants to be reduced to the maximum extent practicable. So what is maximum extent practicable? It's the foundation for all municipal stormwater permits. And it's a technology-based standard that's been established by Congress. It's an evolving concept, and it changes over time as new effectiveness information is gathered and things improve. It's achieved through an iterative process where you implement, you evaluate, and then you revise or you add new best management practices as you go along. In other words, municipalities can't just continue to do what they did 7 years ago if there are better ways to do the job. Federal regulations for municipal stormwater divide the regulations into larger and small municipalities. They call phase one municipalities ones that are greater than 100,000 people, and phase two smaller municipalities. Salinas is a phase one, and it's the only phase one that this board deals with. All the other municipalities in the Central Coast region are all phase two.
Can you tell us what's the difference between phase one and phase two population-wise?
Phase two is greater than 100,000. Sorry, phase two is less than 100,000. Phase one is greater than 100,000. And phase one, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to, a lot of people would say, well, Monterey Peninsula is over 100,000, but you have several cities. Mm-hmm. Collectively, they make probably 100,000, but individually, they do not.
Yeah, correct. And the way the federal regulations are written, it looks at the individual municipality. So the Monterey Peninsula is not categorized under federal law as a phase one, even though collectively they are that size. Yeah. And phase one permits, or phase one municipalities, have individual permits instead of the general permit that the phase two are written in. And phase one permits are therefore more detailed and more specific. There are some differences in the regulations between phase one and phase two. And phase one municipalities were required to obtain permit coverage first. So as such, the city of Salinas has been covered since 1999. That permit was renewed in 2005, and this will be their third permit. The timing of the permit renewal is not only important for water quality, but the city is required by federal law to meet this maximum extent practical standard, and their existing permit does not meet the maximum extent practical standard. The city's existing permit is outdated compared to other phase one permits throughout the state. Stormwater management has progressed since 2005. throughout the nation. And this permit, therefore, does look different than their existing permit. However, there are many similarities in the requirements. The revised permit contains specific requirements, and it is lengthy and more detailed than their old one. But many of those requirements they're already required to do under their existing permit. Our approach with this new permit is consistent with US EPA current guidance, as well as other Phase 1 permits in California. And it's also consistent with the Water Board's direction to provide you with permits that are more, that have specific requirements.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Certainly.
I know this, from reading the record, this is a big point that while it might be a new permit to Salinas to deal with EPA guidance and new technologies, it's still new to Salinas. And I think the point that I would like to ask is that, is it true that if concerned Salinas residents and leaders would talk to other Phase 1 permittees who have gone through this process, would they be told by those other Phase 1 municipalities that, yeah, this was a tough process, it was an upgrade that we really didn't ask for, but we're surviving and it wasn't as bad as we thought? Or would they be told that it's been a nightmare ever since they adjusted to a new modernized permit?
That's a good question. You asked me to speak for what other municipalities would say. Phil, do you have any ideas?
Well, having been involved in municipal stormwater regulation for over a decade, in the Central Coast region and in the San Diego region, I can only say that I think the reaction you get to the question you're asking would be mixed. I think a lot of cities are making good progress and are happy with the progress they're making, and have been able to, you know, comply with the permit and see it and can see the benefit. I think some other cities will probably not feel that way. They'll probably feel like it's been very difficult to fund the program, and I think some of it has to do with the funding mechanisms that are in place with the municipalities. For example, the city of Santa Cruz managed to get their residents to vote for an increased fee to pay for their program. So city of Santa Cruz will probably say, well, we've funded the program and we're happy with it. Other cities may not have that situation. So it's hard to overgeneralize. Or I don't want to overgeneralize in answering your question.
All right. Thank you for trying.
And that was Phil Hammer, the manager of the Stormwater Group. We have a couple other staff that might, will pitch in to answer questions. We have Dominic Rock as well as Karen Worcester here today. So if you see other faces, that's who those people are. Okay, so the permit contains requirements for the city to implement stormwater management actions. And those requirements are lumped into categories. And those categories are sections of the permit. So municipal maintenance, residential, public education, development, construction site management, total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs, which you might hear us talk about later, development planning, illicit discharge detection, commercial and industrial facilities, and trash. And these are common elements of Phase 1 permits throughout the nation, and many of these elements are similar to Phase 2 permits as well, so you've seen a lot of these things before. This figure comes from page 15 of attachment 7 of your packet in the fact sheet, and we'll be using this figure throughout the presentation today. Next, I'll turn it over to John, who will discuss why the permit is important and what our strategy was in developing the permit.
Thank you, Jennifer. I'm John Rohrabaugh, and I am with the Water Board staff. And I'm going to be talking about the need for the permit and about the goal we have for the permit in meeting these needs and the strategy we applied to achieve that goal. The new permit requirements are necessary to address four basic needs. This is a somewhat simplified approach, But I want to communicate these four needs to you. I want to list them briefly and then explain more what they mean. These permit requirements are needed to protect and improve receiving water quality and beneficial uses from the impacts of urban stormwater discharges. They are needed to preserve and restore watershed processes altered by development. Watershed processes include things such as runoff patterns or groundwater recharge. You'll hear more about these processes later. The point I want to make right now is that watershed processes are essential support for sustaining beneficial uses and can be permanently impacted by conventional development practices. Thirdly, these requirements are needed to demonstrate and increase the effectiveness of the city's program and to improve the clarity and enforceability of the permit so that it is more effective at protecting water quality, beneficial uses, and watershed processes. Now I'm going to unpack each of these four needs, beginning with the first one, the need to protect receiving water quality and beneficial uses from pollutants in stormwater discharges.
May I ask a quick question? These four needs, John, where did they come from? Who drafted them?
That's a good question. I'll bring them back up so we can see them all. The stormwater regulations require permits, these stormwater permits, to protect receiving water quality and to restore that water quality where it is possible and where it's practicable. The requirements also, and our own basin plan, focuses us on beneficial uses. And so as we talk about the importance of protecting water quality, beneficial uses, that leads us to the importance of protecting watershed processes, which sustain those beneficial uses. So all of these needs derive essentially from the requirements themselves and the intention of those requirements to protect watershed quality and or water quality and beneficial uses within our watersheds.
So to follow up, the stormwater regulations and the basin plan collectively have a lot of direction, and that direction has been boiled down by staff, I suppose, into four needs that more or less address that whole collective direction.
That's a big part of it. A second part of it is in our examination of the city's current program and its current permit, we've identified some ways in which requirements need to be stepped up, so to speak, to bring the permit to the maximum extent practicable standard and to achieve these grander objectives.
But these grander objectives are what has percolated out of staff's assessment of the basin plan and stormwater reg direction.
That's correct. Is that? I have the support of my team, so yes.
And there are also papers that have been written by independent experts. They've been hired by the US EPA and the State Water Resources Control Board to give guidance to us on how to improve these permits. So I would say the last two are directly related to that guidance.
Okay.
Thank you.
This is Frances down here, and I could just add too that that all of them could be a summary of what is the maximum extent practicable, especially the first two, and then the federal regulations require that to meet the standard and maximum extent practicable, that you demonstrate and that the practices are actually effective in meeting water quality standards. So that's the third one, and that they're also required to be enforceable. So I think the point of the fourth one is that the staff added some things to the permit to make sure that the permit is actually enforceable.
Thank you.
Question I have is, does EPA agree with your conclusion that the current permit does not meet MEP?
The US EPA wrote a comment letter on the draft permit stating that they found that the draft permit, the requirements that we are proposing for adoption today did meet the MEP standard. As Jennifer mentioned earlier, the MEP standard evolves, and so what was might have been MEP 7 years ago when the city's current permit was adopted isn't MEP anymore, and the US EPA was affirming that this new permit keeps pace with the evolving MEP standard.
Okay, thank you.
Could I follow up on that?
Sure.
Because it's important to know, or not know, maybe it's not known, that perhaps both the old and the new meet the USPA's MEP requirements. So you've said the new one does, and I think the question was, did the old one?
At the time that it was adopted?
No. Today, does the old one meet MEP? We know the new one does, according to what you've just said, but how about the old one?
No, the old one does not meet the MEP standard under the current stormwater practices and typical practices throughout the California and throughout the country.
Okay, and I guess the staff is confident about that, but we haven't, have we had US EPA say what you just said?
Do you want to speak more specifically to what you, did, has the EPA spoken
about
that?
I can also interrupt. US EPA recently came out with a permit for the DC area, and in that permit they specifically said that each permit has to be more restrictive. The goal is to meet water quality, and they know that water quality standards, and they know that it won't be done in the first permit, and they know that it won't be done in the second permit. But until you reach water quality standards and attain them, every permit needs to be increasingly restrictive to, you know, move towards that goal. And so the first permits that were developed tended to be more broad and more monitoring and learning. And now that we have that understanding better, the permit should be more restrictive and should be more explicit in the requirements so that we can move towards the goal of attaining water quality standards.
In a roundabout way, it sounds like you're saying that the USPA, by their DC conclusions, would determine that the existing Salinas permit is not compliant, it does not meet the MEP requirements.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
And it sounds like because they commented on the proposed permit by saying it does meet MEP, I think the inference is the old one doesn't, but this proposed one does. Though we don't have a statement specifically saying the old one does not.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
I know.
And we did not ask them for that. To my knowledge, we didn't ask the US EPA to comment on that.
Yeah.
Sure.
These are great questions, and it's important to be in agreement about what the needs are. I also want to mention that the US EPA published an MS4 permit improvement guidance manual a few years ago that outlined specific ways in which, or specific recommendations at least, for how Phase 1 municipal permits in particular need to be updated, the requirements strengthened, and made more rigorous. And so we referenced that guidance manual extensively in developing this permit as well. Anything further on that?
No, Mr. Rose had a...
Maybe I'll just add, Mr. Delgado, your question about these four bullets, particularly number two, to preserve and restore watershed processes. Water Board staff have recognized, as well as many researchers, that how we treat the watershed has a very huge impact, has a very large impact in what happens in surface water quality and groundwater quality too, and also groundwater and surface water availability. So not only with respect to water quality, but then also hydrology and the hydraulics in the whole system. And our staff has developed and presented to our board a vision and measurable goals associated with things like preservation and restoration of watershed processes in recognition of those, how those processes all interact with each other. And the board has encouraged us to pursue encouragement or to encourage municipalities and other parties to implement things that would enhance watershed processes and protect natural systems. In fact, the resolution before this one, which was for the LID project in Santa Barbara, is really a manifestation of the board's direction for staff. So I would say, at least in part, that bullet number two is a result of staff's recommendation and this board's approval for us to move forward with protecting watershed processes. And the permit is just another manifestation of that. And so is that bullet.
And let me reiterate also, protection of watershed processes is not a new concept just drawn out of a hat. It's what staff and other researchers throughout the country have come to understand is important for protecting beneficial uses. If watershed processes aren't protected, it's hard to protect beneficial uses. Are we ready? No, not yet.
Chair, can I ask a question?
Go ahead.
One of the questions reading all these documents is that I've taken, and you talk about preserve and restoring watershed, is that the city of Salinas thinks that they're responsible for all of the watershed, and this is a huge watershed that surrounds the city of Salinas. And some of their comments have been, and it goes on to the receiving water quality.
Mm-hmm.
Their comments have been that the receiving water is not good quality, so why should they be responsible for that in this permit? Now, it's a gigantic question. I understand
sure.
that. So can and you've got folks here that don't understand
sure.
what all that entails. And just to put it up there in a one line sentence,
mm-hmm.
a lot of these folks don't understand that.
I agree. And my intention is to unpack these, and we will at some point. Jennifer, did you want to respond to that question in particular? You're just getting into position. Your question then is,
mm-hmm.
I think another way of putting the question is the city of Salinas responsible for receiving water quality in the large scale? Let's jump back to, let's do this. Is the city of Salinas responsible for protecting receiving water quality on the large scale? I want to address that in at two levels. First of all, The one that will, I'll answer at the first level will be the one that will diffuse tension, and that will clarify the second part. The easy answer is no, the city is not responsible for what, maybe using the wrong one, for discharges that enter the receiving waters from outside the permit coverage area, provided that those areas does not enter the receiving waters through the city's storm drain system. So the city is not responsible for discharges or resulting water quality from those discharges discharges from areas outside the permit coverage area. Okay, let's be clear about that. The city is not responsible for what other parties put into these receiving waters. The flip side is that the city is responsible for what it puts into those receiving waters. And so therefore it has some concern for receiving water quality. And receiving water quality monitoring, while not the best way to track the city's program and how effective it is, it is still one of the ways, and one of the important ways, to track the effectiveness of the city's program. And the effectiveness of the city's program ought to be reflected in improvements in receiving water quality. Finally, the reason we focus on receiving water quality and those four needs is because, A, this is what the federal regulations are concerned with, and that's what the regulations are written to protect, is receiving water quality. So we'll say more about how all of these pieces as we move along, but I want to make sure I've addressed your at least your large picture concerns at this point.
Whoops, I'm sorry.
No, but I'm sure somebody in the staff is going to, and I don't know if you're going to get to the point, but in the last approval of this waiver 5 years ago or 6 years ago, there was a big issue about putting monitoring and the receiving waters by the city of Salinas made a great point of that most of the contamination of receiving water is from agriculture. I had no way to justify that, so I was trying to push for monitoring wells or monitoring points on the receiving waters through the tributaries that came through the city of Salinas, mm-hmm. as well as monitoring points as it exited the city of Salinas to find out mm-hmm. if that's true. Mm-hmm. And or is the city of Salinas contributing to the contamination to the receiving waters as it flows through the city? But is anybody in the staff going to address that?
In fact, we are.
Okay,
yes.
Good. So I'll wait for that.
Okay.
Yeah, if memory serves, as John is saying, he's unpacking these four bullets, and I believe the answer to that question is in the package.
Okay. Hold on one sec, Mr. Johnston, then Mr. Delgado.
Yes, John. Tell me if I'm getting ahead of you, but you answered that Salinas is not responsible for what other folks put into the receiving waters.
Correct.
That they're only responsible for what they put into the receiving waters, and you may be getting to this. My question is, some of the receiving waters, those creeks as they pass through Salinas, are also part of Salinas's stormwater system.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming that what comes out of that is a combination of what Salinas has put in and what entered Salinas in those creeks. So I guess there's some mixed responsibility for that. Are you going to get to that?
Yes, we are. I appreciate the questions because you're all way ahead of me in terms of where I am here because I'm at the beginning, and that's fine. You had a very different idea about what order this information should be given in. Mm-hmm. And
I can wait.
We're here to serve
if
you.
If you're going there, I can wait.
Yeah. John, that's...
So, John, why don't you wait?
Okay.
You have the answers in your presentation.
Yeah, don't jump ahead.
Okay. Mr. Delgado.
Yeah, I have a backup question. I think there might possibly be confusion in people's minds if they're hearing some of this for the first time, what receiving waters are. Is it the waters that the city receives, or is it the water that the city puts into? And I know it's the latter, but if you could explain this term, receiving water, just for the benefit of everyone in the building before we go on.
Okay. Receiving waters, simply put, are waters that receive discharges. It's a general definition. In particular, the federal regulations identify receiving waters as waters of the United States. So within the federal regulations, those two terms are roughly interchangeable. In this particular case, we identify the primary receiving waters as the Reclamation Ditch and the Salinas River. Now, I say that those are the primary receiving waters because Gabalon Creek and Natividad Creek and even Santa Rita Creek for a small portion are also receiving waters, but since they flow into the Reclamation Ditch, ultimately all of that water gets into the Reclamation Ditch and ultimately goes into Monterey Bay. We don't consider Monterey Bay to be a receiving water per se because we could say, you know, the Atlantic Ocean is because Pacific gets there eventually. So there's some practical boundaries on this concept of what a receiving water is.
Thank you.
Okay. We were talking about needs. Let's go back here. And I wanted to start with this first need for the new requirements, which is to protect and improve receiving water quality. As we've mentioned, Salinas has two primary receiving watersheds. The Salinas River and the Reclamation Ditch. The 303D list for impaired water bodies lists impairments for both of those receiving waters for several constituents. that are affected by urban stormwater or identify urban stormwater as a likely source. Those impairments in particular are for nutrients, for bacteria, metals, turbidity, and toxicity. Monitoring data from the city of Salinas and from our Central Coast Ambient Monitoring Program has indicated that the city of Salinas is likely causing or contributing to several of these impairments that I have just mentioned. Getting my controls mixed up here. For instance, monitoring data indicates that the city's stormwater discharges, and by this what I mean is where the water comes out of the city's storm drain system before it gets into the receiving water, it's still just urban stormwater runoff. When that water is monitored, what we're finding is that those discharges frequently exceed water quality criteria for these components: metals, bacteria, orthophosphate, which is a nutrient, and turbidity. And these are constituents for which the Salinas River and the reclamation ditch are impaired. Secondly, monitoring data has indicated that water quality in the Salinas River is significantly and noticeably worse downstream of the city's stormwater outfall during wet weather or during storm events. So when stormwater runoff is coming out of the city of Salinas, so the Salinas River water quality is worse downstream of where the city's stormwater discharge enters the river.
Mr. Johnston.
Two questions. First of all, the first set of metals, bacterial indicators, et cetera, it says stormwater discharges. Are we specifically referencing Salinas stormwater discharges?
That's correct.
Okay. And second, what's orthophosphate?
Orthophosphate is a nutrient. It's found in detergents. What's one of the primary sources of orthophosphate from urban sources? It's also found in fertilizers. Anything else?
Go ahead.
Thank you for your question. In addition to these constituents, Central Coast Water Board staff have also detected high levels of trash in both the reclamation ditch and in the Salinas River outfall channel. This map shows the city of Salinas here to the upper right. This area right here is a city pump station that pumps stormwater discharges through an underground pipeline to a short channel here and thence to the Salinas River. Talking about trash, Central Coast Water Board staff took this photograph just 3 weeks ago in that little channel going to the Salinas River so this trash was carried to this channel from in the city's stormwater discharges. The city has since cleaned up this trash in response to notification by the Water Board staff that the problem existed. But the extent of trash shown in this picture indicates the need for requirements that address sources of trash and requirements to remove trash from stormwater discharges. All right. Secondly, this permit is needed to preserve and restore watershed processes affected by development. Conventional development practices are not sufficiently protective of watershed processes which sustain beneficial uses. In addition, as we've already mentioned, the city has identified this gray area as a future growth area for the city of Salinas. This area right here itself consists of almost 2,400 acres, is planned for over 11,000 dwelling units and almost 4 million square feet of commercial, industrial, and mixed-use development. Portions of this area are already in specific planning stages. Conventional development practices alter landscapes. This figure shows, this gives an example. These photographs are before and after situation for taken in Monterey County. It illustrates what a landscape can look like before development occurs. Granted, not a lot of the future growth area looks like this. It's primarily agriculture right now, and that future growth area in the city of Salinas. But it's still representative of what kinds of changes urban development can make to a landscape. Those changes in landscape alter runoff conditions, how the water flows off the land, and ultimately impact watershed processes. Urban development of the magnitude of the future growth area has the potential to significantly alter watershed processes, resulting in increased impacts to beneficial uses. These impacts are much more difficult to reverse or to restore after the development has occurred. This future growth area is poised for development, and that provides a sense of urgency for this new permit to address those the water quality issues in those areas.
Can I ask a quick clarifying question?
Yes.
Your last statement was that urgency, and is it urgent because the current permit does not comply with US EPA guidance, and so before you develop or enter into contracts that have development terms regarding stormwater and stormwater facilities, that this board is concerned and staff is concerned that we need a new permit before those future developments happen so that they can happen according to the new rules rather than the old rules so that they can be compliant with the new rules?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Would you agree? Okay. All right. So thirdly, this permit is needed to demonstrate and increase the effectiveness at the city's, of the city's program in protecting water quality, beneficial uses, and watershed processes. While we are able to characterize the city's stormwater quality somewhat, as I mentioned, we're unable to see water quality improvements at this point resulting from the city's actions in the short term. What I mean by that is that we've been monitoring receiving water quality, the city has been performing stormwater actions, and we're not sure, able to see from the monitoring data we have whether or not the city's actions are making a lot of difference. There are a couple of reasons for that. One is the variability inherent in stormwater and stormwater monitoring makes assessing trends difficult. The other reason is that assessing trends takes a lot of data, which either requires a lot of time or requires getting a lot of data quickly in a short period of time. The existing permit focuses on receiving water quality that takes decades to show change, as opposed to focusing on discharge water quality, the quality of the water that comes out of the city's pipes, or focusing on pollutant load reductions, actually measuring what the city is preventing from getting into the pipes or into the receiving waters in terms of pollutants. So new permit requirements are needed, which focus on assessing pollutant load reductions and discharge water quality in the short term, and which provide assessment of receiving water quality and beneficial use conditions and improvements in the long term. And the permit before you today contains these needed requirements.
Question for you.
Yes.
So is that, you know, as I read through the comment letters, the one word that pops up in different ways is cost, financial impact, unintended consequences. Is the bulk of the cost argument related to the new requirements that are needed?
Certainly.
You know, I mean, that's...
I mean, it's a bigger picture than that. But yes, as I understand the city's comments, what they're primarily concerned with is what they see to be increased requirements, which involve increased costs.
Right, right.
Turn on your mic.
We'll be discussing cost in a little bit as well.
Okay.
Part of what may be behind your concern is, gosh, all these new requirements to meet these needs, doesn't that just elevate cost? And we're going to talk about this more later, but staff has taken a lot of care to improve the efficiency of the requirements, not just shovel a bunch of new things onto the permit, but reduce some areas in order to increase others and try to maximize the efficiency of the city's use of resources and time and everything else.
Are you going to talk about the low-impact development, the LID program?
I am not, but other staff will talk about that today.
Because I know the city has instituted that in some development projects they have throughout the city, and I just wondered how that plays into this.
Yeah, we will be talking about that a little later on in this presentation.
And as the chairman brought up, the continuously is cost.
Mm-hmm.
And does the staff have any analysis what the LID program additional cost to the city and to developers to do that type of project?
Yes, we're going to be talking about some cost issues related to this permit a little later on in this presentation. Okay?
Go ahead.
Do I have your leave? Here we go.
Yes.
Fourthly, the need for this permit is to improve the enforceability of the permit to make it more effective at protecting water quality, beneficial uses, and watershed processes. Existing requirements in the existing permit lack sufficient detail and specificity with respect to implementation expectations, information management, effectiveness assessment, reporting, and other areas. This lack of specificity makes compliance assessment difficult for both the city and for Water Board staff. The new permit attempts to increase specificity in key areas to improve the enforceability of the permit. Before we leave this issue of the need for the permit, it's important to keep in mind what the permit requirements are designed to protect. By that I mean the beneficial uses of the primary receiving waters in the Salinas Valley, but we're also talking about Monterey Bay, which is a federally recognized marine sanctuary of national significance. Here's a shot of the kelp forest from underneath, not an angle most of us get. And it's also designed to protect water quality in Elkhorn Slough, and I've got to apologize at this scale. I think it's about here.
No.
Is that up here? Somewhere there. Elkhorn Slough is a state-designated ecological reserve and part of Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. And as Jennifer pointed out earlier, tidal action carries pollutants from waters discharged by the Old Salinas River and through the reclamation ditch into Elkhorn Slough. All right, I'm going to talk to you now about the goal of this permit. The goal of this permit is to focus on actions that achieve tangible results. We really want to be able to demonstrate tangible improvements in pollutant load reductions, in receiving water quality. So we're looking for tangible results in terms of reducing pollutant loads and improving discharge water quality in the short term, because those are things in which we can see improvements in the short term. And in the long term, seeing tangible improvements in receiving water quality as a result of the city's actions, and in maintaining and restoring watershed processes. Again, these are long-term issues. They take a long time for effects to be realized. And permit requirements are designed to achieve tangible results in these areas over time. You've trained me. I almost don't go on to my next one without looking to see if there's a question. It's Pavlovian almost. You can see.
You're a quick learner.
All right. The permit achieves this goal through a strategy of integrated and interacting components. Jennifer showed you part of this diagram a few minutes ago, and I'm going to be talking about it in more depth. It now looks a little bit more like the diagram that you have on page 15 of attachment 7 in your staff report. I hit a button by mistake. Let me go back here. All right. These little circles represent permit provision sections and represent stormwater management actions that the city conducts and which the permit requires the city to conduct. These actions evolve, they change over time as the city modifies its program to improve its effectiveness. Several items will influence that evolution over time. Those factors are current best practices, and I'll talk about that in a moment. Second factor is watershed characterization, and the third is effectiveness assessment. And I'll speak to you about how those affect the evolution of these stormwater management actions. The first factor that influences the evolution of stormwater management actions is current best practices. Current best practices simply refers to elements which are typical stormwater management actions throughout phase one and many phase two municipalities. It's simply the conventional wisdom and what most communities do to manage stormwater. Staff compared the city's existing requirements to these current best practices and phase one permits throughout California and found that the city's current requirements are significantly less rigorous in many ways than the current standard practice among phase one municipalities. And therefore, staff has brought the city's requirements up to speed in many key areas with this new permit. Staff has also increased specificity in watershed characterization and effectiveness assessment to enable the city to be more effective and more efficient. Finally, we even left out some things that are typical in phase one permits where they didn't make sense or did not seem appropriate for the city of Salinas. And we took all of these current best practices and we tailored them to the city's conditions in a way that was appropriate and effective for the city of Salinas. The second factor influencing the evolution of stormwater management actions over time is watershed characterization. Watershed characterization involves identifying watershed conditions, identifying their greatest needs and the greatest opportunities for protecting or preserving watershed processes. The purpose of watershed characterization is to tell the city where its efforts are most needed and where they will do the most good. Watershed characterization will have most influence on actions in future permit terms because this permit focuses on doing the watershed characterization, getting the knowledge, gaining the information for making that assessment and that evaluation. The third factor influencing the evolution of stormwater management actions over time is effectiveness assessment.
And John, all of these categories you're mentioning,
yes,
they all flow from EPA guidance documents on what should appear in a phase one stormwater permit?
They flow from US EPA guidance of what should appear. They also flow from our assessment of what is current standard practice that achieves the maximum extent practicable standard for phase one stormwater permits.
Dr. Hunter.
Okay, so I believe Jennifer mentioned that the region has been, there are some watersheds identified with this creek. So in terms of watershed characterization, are those defined in the permit as to what level? I mean, they're in the Salinas Valley watershed. So is it constrained by these sub-watersheds?
Yes, it is. The permit does not require the city to look past its limits to be concerned to a great extent on what's going on outside.
I just want to point out that in attachment.
Wait.
Okay. Where's the table of contents?
introduction.
Tamara, maybe I can state your name.
Hi, this is Tamara Presser. So I'm looking in the table of contents of the permit, and one of the attachments actually includes a map that illustrates the, or not illustrates, but designates the sub-watersheds.
Permit. So you're looking at attachment 6?
No, of the agenda package, you're looking at
tab. Attachment 6 attachment of the 6. Agenda package, and then it is attachment F of the draft order.
Of the draft order. Okay. So.
I don't think so.
So if you look toward the back of attachment 6 in your agenda package, you'll find.
Is it F1? Attachment F1?
Yeah. F1 is page 1 of F, yes.
Okay. I see.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So look for F, but I don't have a page number. Okay.
Jeff, I just want to add to the response to your question that what is the source of those requirements. They're specifically in the federal regulations require all those things to be addressed, and including the current best practices, because MEP, again, is defined as an iterative process that is required to evolve over time. So you look at management practices now, and then next permit round, you look at the management practices now, you know, now, and the iterative process requires that they evolve over that time period.
That's the answer I was looking for. That, in other words, staff hasn't created those.
No, headaches. Staff did not create those. They aren't. They are specifically addressed in federal regulations.
Right. Okay.
Okay. In attachment 6, I'm seeing attachment F1, Salinas existing urban subwatersheds, which is a listing, but I don't see the map. So, is that in your presentation coming up? Do we see the geographic kind of view of those subwatersheds?
Okay. Let me do this narratively, if we can. I don't know that we have a map later on in the presentation for that. We'll look for it. First thing to understand is that the city's waters, receiving waters, are the Salinas River, the Reclamation Ditch, Santa Rita Creek, Natividad Creek, and Gabon Creek. Areas within the city's limits that are defined and within the defined permit coverage area flow to one of those 5 receiving waters. Those basically are the watersheds that we're talking about in this permit. It's not the full list, but it certainly doesn't. Those watersheds that are of concern in this permit do not extend upstream past the city's limits or downstream past the city's limits, even though, they, of course, they are part of those larger watersheds, okay. In fact.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
It does, although, you know, I'm trying to understand what we're asking them to do in terms of watershed characterization.
And we're going to be explaining that a little later on in the presentation.
Okay, very good.
Okay. So right now we're talking about the third thing that will influence the evolution of stormwater management actions over time, which is effectiveness assessment tools that provide feedback on the effectiveness of the city's actions. This permit includes effectiveness assessment tools, which Tamara will describe later on, tools which are designed to identify actions that are most effective and how to implement those actions most effectively. These tools inform modifications of the program to improve the program's effectiveness in the short term as well as the long term, and to enable the city to make improvements more quickly and therefore more frequently to improve the effectiveness of the program. Those three elements, stormwater management actions, watershed characterization, and effectiveness assessment, interact and inform one another in a feedback loop. Watershed characterization will help the city identify where actions are most needed or where they will do the most good. Effectiveness assessment will help the city identify which actions are most effective at meeting those needs. And together, they will help the city implement the best management practices where they are needed most to optimize the overall effectiveness of the program at protecting and improving water quality, beneficial uses, and watershed processes. And let me give you an example of what I mean by that. Suppose, now we're 4 years down the road, and the watershed characterization has been done, and the analysis has been conducted. And suppose that watershed characterization identifies that sediment is a primary threat to beneficial uses in Gavilan Creek. Are you with me on that? We're supposing. Then also suppose that the city's effectiveness assessment analysis indicates that street sweeping is the most effective means of reducing sediment discharges to Gavilan Creek. Putting those two pieces together suggests that the most effective action would be to increase the frequency of street sweeping efforts in areas that drain to Gavilan Creek. That's fairly straightforward. But it also indicates that other stormwater quality actions in those same areas might be less important and therefore can be deprioritized. So this process is not intended simply to just keep raising the bar forever or in all areas, but to help the city focus, identify first those activities that are going to do the most good, and then focus efforts on those things by deprioritizing other actions. This approach will optimize the effectiveness of the city's stormwater program most efficiently, taking into account limited resources, costs, those kinds of things. This strategy of integrated and interacting components makes a better permit. It results in targeted implementation rather than a shotgun approach. It achieves greater results more efficiently, and it also supports the Water Board's vision for healthy watersheds and the measurable goals that the board has established for achieving healthy watersheds over time. Now, if there are no other questions, I'm going to turn the microphone over to Tamara Presser, who will discuss specific requirements contained in the permit and how this permit differs from the existing permit, which I think we'll get to some of the questions.
I don't think we have any. Do we have questions? Okay.
All right. Thank
you
very much.
We're actually going to break for lunch.
Okay.
Okay. This is a nice transition point.
Okay.
And Mr. Young?
Yes.
Before we do that, also, just for anybody who's parked out here locally, the police are not enforcing the two-hour limit on your parking, so you don't have to go move your car to the next parking spot over. Good news.
Okay. So how many minutes do we need? Is there much closed session for us to deal with? There is. So probably an hour. Okay. So we will reconvene at a little after 1 o'clock. Thank you.